It's Tuned to Yesterday, bringing you programs from radio's golden age. I'm your host, Mark Levenier. Welcome. In this hour, science fiction. Later on, we hear suspense with the story Re-entry. But right now, it's all the way to the year 1982 from a story on Dimension X. This, their fourth broadcast in this heralded NBC series from April 29th, 1950. It's the story No Contact.
Adventures in Time and Space. Transcribed in future tense.
Dimension X.
Can you predict what will come in 100 years? Or in 10? Or in the next minute? Some people think they can. Nuclear scientists, mathematicians, astronomers, biologists. They'll predict the shape of the future. Why? Because they make the future. Because they see beyond the known dimensions of time and space into the unknown. Dimension X. It was in the year of 1982 that spacemen first discovered the Great Galactic Barrier. In the past 10 years, rocket travel to the moon and the nearer planets had become commonplace. And then men fixed their sights on a more distant star, the remote planet known as Volta. 5 exploratory ships went out, and none came back, each in turn disappearing mysteriously at the same vanishing point, at an invisible wall somewhere in the vast outer reaches that became known as the wrecker of spaceships, the Galactic Reef. Yet the explorers refused to admit defeat. It was on June the 2nd, 1987, that the rocket Star Cloud made ready for takeoff, the 6th to attempt to crack the barrier and win through to Volta.
Now hear this. Condition green. Two minutes.
I don't suppose you'll want the ship's doctor up here on the bridge during blast off.
I think not, Smitty.
All right, then. I'll be in the sick bay counting vitamin pills if you need me. Good luck, Lewis.
Thank you, Smitty. Lieutenant Collier.
Yes, sir.
You're relieved. You better get down to navigation control and take over.
Yes, sir.
Oh, Lieutenant.
Yes, sir.
we've never flown together before. This is your first flight in a space vessel as big as the Star Cloud, isn't it?
Yes, sir. But I was trained in oversized jobs at the Naval Academy.
Well, if you're half as good a navigator as your father was, you'll do fine.
Thank you, sir. You were old shipmates, weren't you?
Old shipmates? I served under them in the first rocket that ever got back to its base in one piece. We flew that mission in a tin can not much better than a primitive guided missile. I almost went along on the last trip your father made to the barrier. Too bad about that.
Yes, sir.
Well, that's all, Collier. I'll bus you when you get down to nav control. Lieutenant Paulson.
Yes, sir.
Get me ground control tower on the radio. I want to talk to Colonel Harrison.
Sparks has the circuit up now, Captain. Go ahead, sir. I patched in our bridge speaker.
Colonel Harrison.
Yes, Captain.
We're standing by for takeoff in 60 seconds.
Good. The field is cleared of all personnel. We'll try to reestablish radio contact immediately after takeoff. In any event, there'll be a 24-hour ground monitor.
Fine.
Good luck. I hope you make it.
Thank you. Bridge to navigation control.
Nav control, Collier.
Ready, Lieutenant?
We're ready, Captain. The course is in the integrator for takeoff at 1,200 hours.
All right. Stand by for blastoff. Bridge to engine room. Fire up your rocket chambers. Take off at exactly 1,200 hours. I'll read you off. 20 seconds, 19, 18, 17, 16.
Condition red.
Hold it,
condition
please. Hold
red.
Who turned in that alarm?
We uncovered a stowaway, sir.
Stowaway? Where, Masters?
Hiding in 6 Bay. Dr. Smithson found him.
Have him brought up to the bridge. Engine room, kill your rockets and stand by.
Harrison, this is Colonel Harrison in ground control. What's holding you up?
Trouble.
What's the matter with you?
What's the matter with you? There's a stowaway aboard.
Stowaway?
Yes, I thought your men were supposed to police this base. What's the matter with
all
you?
All right, Captain, take it easy.
You know what this delay can do to us, don't you? 1 minute later, takeoff can throw us a million miles off course. We'll have to reintegrate the whole work.
Well, look, how long do you think it'll take?
Don't bother me for a while. I'm busy.
stupid idiots.
Captain Thornton.
Oh, come in, Smitty.
Here's your stove.
I'll court-martial the... Charlie.
Can you use a good radio man, Skipper?
See you two have met.
Met? The Skipper and me made 50 trips to the moon together. Didn't we, Captain?
Charlie, if you wanted to come along, why didn't you volunteer?
I did, Skipper. They turned me down.
What's wrong with you?
Acceleration bend.
Oh.
They said my arteries wouldn't stand another trip.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that.
But they're wrong, sir. I got one more good trip in me. Now, listen, Captain. You know these green kids don't know the first thing about space radio operations. You put a man like me on, I'll be getting you a bedtime story for Mars.
Now, listen, Charlie, you know the regulations as well as I do. I can't take you much as I'd like to.
Colonel Harrison will murder me for this.
I'm sorry, Charlie. I'll have to put you aground. I'll tell you what. I'll ask Harrison to put you on as ground radio contact. It'll seem as if you were right here with us.
He won't do it, sir.
He'd better, or I'll have him busted to corporal for letting you sneak aboard. Now, you'd better be off, Charlie. Masters.
Yes, sir.
I'm sending this man aground. Give him time to clear the launching platform.
Yes, sir.
So long, Charlie. I'm really sorry.
Good luck, Skipper.
I thought you were going to have him drawn and quartered.
If it'd been anybody else, I would have, Smitty. But Charlie, well, he's kind of special. Been with me since my first command, when we began the regular run to the moon. If he wanted to come along this time, well, it's only through loyalty to me.
You know, Lewis, I didn't realize it before, but you're almost human.
Bilge. Navigation, Lieutenant Collier, you there?
Nav control, Collier.
Lieutenant, how badly are we fouled up? Can you recalculate the course, or shall I cancel the takeoff?
I've already plotted a new course on the integrator, sir.
Good.
Can we take off in exactly 2 minutes?
2 minutes?
Yes, sir. If we can, all we need to correct is for only a 1 degree deflection. I can do that before we breach the stratosphere.
That's quick work. Are you sure?
Positive, sir.
Well, all right, Collier. I'm putting it in your hands. We'll blast off on your signal.
Lewis, isn't that a lot of responsibility for a young green officer?
Yes, but if he can't do his job, I'd rather find out now than at the galactic barrier. Bridge to engine room. Prepare to blast off on navigator signal. How are we doing, Collier?
Coming on the bearings, sir. 4, 3, 2, 0. We've intersected the course vector.
Good work, Collier.
The course is corrected, sir. Ready to go into atomic overdrive anytime you say.
All right, stand by. Now hear this. Prepare for maximum acceleration. Bridge to engine room. Kill your rockets.
Rockets out.
Fire up number one cyclotron.
Number one ready.
Fire up number two.
Number two ready.
Withdraw your dampening rods.
Aye. Fission chamber ready. Blast tubes cleared. All generators operating at capacity, sir.
Right. Go into overdrive on the count of zero.
5 seconds, Captain.
3, 2, 1.
1, 0.
Zero. How are we doing, Collier?
On course, sir. She's running hot and true.
Well, my compliments, Lieutenant.
Thank you, sir.
This job would have done your father credit. He was one of the best navigation officers I ever saw.
Thanks, sir.
Now start your gyros and put her on robot control. The bridge is yours, Mr. Collier. If you need me, I'll be in Dr. Smithson's office.
Yes, sir.
See, you got us off the ground.
Yeah, you can thank young Collier for that. Chip off the old block.
You knew his father?
Matter of fact, I knew him very well. First-rate spaceman.
Is he the one who...
Yes. He was lost in the galactic barrier on the second ship we sent out to Volta.
Lewis, just what do you think this galactic barrier is?
Your guess is as good as mine, Doc. All I know is that 5 ships have gone into it. None of them have come back out.
How about Miss Strovic's theory that it's a time warp in space, that the ships reach it and slip into another dimension?
Ah, rubbish. My theory is that the galactic barrier is nothing more than a radioactive layer of some kind.
What makes you say that?
Well, we know that radar signals bounce off it like they were hitting an invisible glass wall. And we know that it destroys our ships and crews in some way. There's no other logical explanation.
What makes you think we can get through it, Lewis?
Because we're ready for it. The others weren't. The entire hull is completely shielded with lead. We can crack through any radioactive cloud ever detected. Besides, we're equipped with some new UHF radio devices that should enable us to maintain radio contact with Earth. Nothing can happen. Absolutely nothing.
Who are you trying to convince?
Myself, I suppose.
Lewis, you've had your share of glory. First skipper to reach the moon back in 1962.
Yeah.
You could have retired. Why are you risking this trip?
Because five ships are missing. And men like Prentiss and Marketson and young Collier's father. I'm tired of seeing good men fed into that meat chopper.
Then why are we going?
We haven't any choice, Smitty. We're in a race, the kind of race where men and ships are expendable. According to Interspace Code, the first nation to reach Volta can claim it.
Personally, I want no part of it.
Doc, there are a dozen nations who feel very differently about that.
I know. You're right, of course. Well, at least it won't be boring. I'll have to play physician morale builder and mother substitute for 112 slightly nervous men.
Your morale doesn't sound too good, Doc.
As morale officer, I can state without fear of contradiction, it is terrible. And something tells me that as we approach that galactic barrier, I'm not going to be alone.
Hello, Earth. Hello, Earth. Captain Thorson of the Star Cloud calling Earth. Star Cloud to Earth. Can you read me?
Hello, Star Cloud. Hi, Captain.
Charlie. Well, I see they haven't court-martialed you yet.
Oh, sir. Thanks to you.
It's good to hear you. You can read us the funny papers on Sunday morning.
Right.
How's our signal?
Strong. Clear as a bell.
Well, here's our log report for Colonel Harrison. Ready?
Shoot.
June 2nd, 1987. 4 weeks out from Earth. Running through, no radiation. Operation normal. Still making our approach to the galactic barrier. That's all, Charlie. See you later.
Good luck, Captain. I sure wish I was with you.
How's the morale, Smitty?
Well, the men know we're getting closer to the barrier. They're beginning to show a little tension, Lewis.
How's their physical condition? Any sickness?
About half the crew has come down with space blues.
I was afraid of that. Bad?
Oh, same as usual. Lips and hands with a bluish cast. Eyes are sensitive to infrareds.
I don't know. When I first started flying these tin cans, nobody ever heard of space blues.
There's a theory it's caused by the terrific acceleration of the atomic overdrive.
Mm.
The change in gravity affects the circulation.
And what do you think?
Oh, I think it's psychosomatic. I've noticed that the same men who get space blues under tension on a ship tend to get blue coloration back on Earth when they're upset. I guess it's an occupational disease of space navigators.
You think it's just nerves, then?
I don't know. Young Collier's got a bad case. Yes, I think it's tension from overwork.
Well, maybe he needs some vitamins.
Lewis, when will you realize that vitamins are not a panacea for all the troubles of mankind?
Sir, I understand you've relieved me from duty.
Dr. Smithson says you aren't looking very well, Collier. I'm just giving you a rest.
But, sir, I feel perfectly able to continue.
Your lips are as blue as Minnetonka.
Captain, I'd like to remain at my post.
Don't be so foolhardy, Lieutenant.
I'm not being foolhardy, sir. You see, I have a special personal reason for wanting this expedition to reach Volta.
Oh, your father?
Yes, sir, my father.
You think he might still be alive?
Sir, I have to find out what happened.
I think I understand. Very well, Collier. Report back to duty.
getting a +5 radar bounce now, sir. Coming off the barrier almost as fast as we send it out.
What's the interval?
0.3 seconds. Shortening steadily. This rate will hit the wall the next few minutes.
All right. Alert the crew. Sound general quarters.
Now hear this. Condition red. We are now approaching the galactic barrier. All hands to station. All radiation detectors to be fully manned. Full security will prevail until further notice. That is all.
Wallison.
Aye, sir.
Radar bounces up to +6. We better try to make final contact with Earth. Is Spark still trying to raise the base?
Yes, sir, but he's not having much luck.
Huh?
Seems to be some interference. Well, that's the radio room now. Yes? You've got him? Well, cut in on the bridge speaker. The captain will take it from here.
Hello, Star Cloud to Earth. Can you hear me, Earth?
Hello, Skipper. I can barely read you. We're getting heavy static from sunspots.
That's not sunspots. We're right on the galactic barrier. Getting a +7 radar bounce. Expect to hit the barrier almost any second now.
Good luck, Skipper.
Look, Charlie, stick with us, will you? We're switching to the automatic center now so you can track us in.
Okay.
If we crack the barrier and come through still in one piece, I'll try to get back to you on the high-frequency band.
Gotcha, Skipper. Don't worry. I'll be waiting.
So long, Charlie.
So long, Star Cloud.
We must be getting awfully close now, Captain. Echo's bouncing back so fast, it's almost beating the signal.
And when they coincide, hold on to your hat. That's when we run into the wall.
A second. Hold on. Here goes nothing.
Here it comes.
It, Captain.
No radiation, no time warp, no nothing. The crew's gone crazy, sir.
Madam, they earned it.
Hey, Doc, can you break up a few bottles of snake bite serum for medicinal purposes?
I sure can, Lou.
This calls for a celebration. How's your morale now?
Couldn't be better. How's yours?
Couldn't be better. Hey, what the?
Condition red. Condition red. Radiation detected. Condition red. Radiation detected.
Holy mackerel. Look at the needle on that indicator.
Wallison. I see it, Captain. Picking up radiation like crazy.
What's it like?
It's a strong impulse.
What kind?
I don't know, sir. It's too long for a cosmic ray and too short for UHF. The ship's lousy with it.
Man your battle station!
Wallison, track it down. Triangulate and make it fast. I want a directional field.
Yes, sir.
Engine room.
Yes, sir.
We're picking up radioactivity. Is it the fission chambers?
No leak here, sir.
I'll check your gauges.
Nothing here, Captain. Must be coming from outside.
Damage control.
Yes, sir?
Is radiation penetrating the lead field?
Haven't found anything yet, sir.
Well, keep at it. Paulison, how are you doing?
I've got a fix, Captain.
What is it?
I'll have to recheck my figures.
Well, hurry up.
The angle is correct.
Come on, man, for Pete's sake. What's the radiation from?
It's coming from inside the ship.
That's impossible.
Oh, sir, I checked it twice.
Well, it's got to be the engines.
If it is, we're finished.
Engine room.
Yes, sir.
That radiation must be in the overdrive pile.
No, sir. It isn't here, sir.
Are you, sir?
Yes, sir.
All right, keep checking. Well, only one thing left to do. Paulison, get a Geiger counter. We're going to start combing this ship inch by inch.
Yes, sir.
Turn it on.
Yes, sir. Ready, Captain.
We'll check the atomic guns first. Come on. We'll cut through the officer's quarters to ordnance.
Yes, sir.
Here.
Wait a minute, sir.
Huh? What is it?
Signal is weaker now.
Yeah. Let's go back. Hold it. Seems strongest right about here.
Doesn't make sense.
Whose cabin is this?
Lieutenant Collier's.
Collier!
Oh, he's down in nav control, sir.
Well, drive the door.
Not locked, sir. This is in here, all right. Listen to that counter. It's strongest over here.
Open that wall cabinet.
It's locked, sir.
I'll smash it. Shut off the Geiger counter. Well, what do you make of this, Paulison?
Well, it looks like some sort of portable transmitter, sir. Must be foreign manufacture. I don't recognize the calibration symbols at all. I've never seen anything like it.
Which raises a small question. What is Lieutenant Collier doing with a transmitter in his cabin?
I don't know, sir.
Well, I intend to find out, Paulison. Get down to nav control and bring Collier up to the bridge on the double.
Well, hadn't we better find some way to shut this thing off first?
I know a way. Lieutenant Collier, I'm going to ask a few simple questions.
Yes, sir.
And I want a few simple answers.
Yes, sir.
What were you doing with a transmitter in your cabin?
Transmitter, Captain.
You know nothing about it?
No, sir, I don't.
Do you recognize these calibration symbols?
No, sir.
Well, can you think of how it might have been placed in your cabin without your knowing it?
No, sir, unless someone came in while I was on duty.
Well, would that have been possible?
Well, I suppose so. Well, someone had a key.
I found your cabin door unlocked.
I meant a key to the wall cabinet.
I didn't say the wall cabinet.
Oh, well, sir, I...
You what, Lieutenant? How could you have known it was in the wall cabinet?
Well, I just assumed.
Lieutenant Collier, I find it hard to believe you would lie. Having known and respected your father and having observed the way you handled your job. However, I intend to get to the root of this thing. May I have your wristwatch, Lieutenant?
Sir?
Your wristwatch.
Here you are, sir.
Paulison, turn on that Geiger counter.
Yes, sir.
Now hold this watch next to it.
Yes, sir.
That's all. Lieutenant, if you hadn't any close contact with that transmitter, how do you explain the radioactivity of this watch?
Well, I don't, sir.
I think you'd better. To whom were you sending those signals?
Condition red. Condition red.
There's your answer, Captain.
What is this, Collier?
Alien spaceship approaching. Alien spaceship approaching.
Collier, who's aboard that ship? All right, now talk.
Very well, Captain. My mission seems completed.
Your mission? Are you admitting that you're an agent of a foreign power?
I am stating it.
What nation?
No nation, Captain.
What?
I am an agent of the Voltan government.
The what?
The government of the planet of Voltan.
Are you crazy?
Are you so stupid that you think your people are the only ones who can invade another planet?
Lieutenant, what do you mean?
We've had agents operating on Earth since 1945.
I don't believe you.
What do you think happened to those five ships, Captain? Where do you suppose we got our information?
Well,
your language, your culture, family background.
Your appearance, you look like...
Like Commander Collier? Is that so surprising, Captain? We had a living model.
I ought to kill you.
That would be very foolish, Captain. I would advise you to surrender without delay.
Alien ship now coming into ordnance range.
I'll deal with you later, Collier. Paulison.
Yes, sir.
Put this man in irons and take him away.
Don't worry, sir. We'll take good care of him.
Thunder! Rustin!
Gunnery.
Gunnery, Richardson.
What's the range?
10,000 meters. They're closing fast.
What's your guns on radar tracking?
Tracking. Coming on the bearing.
Fire. Fire, Richardson, did you hear me? Fire! What's the matter down there, did you hear me? Richardson, answer me! What?
It's no use to shout, Captain.
Collier. How did you get loose? Where's Paulison?
Lieutenant Paulison is dead.
All stations, Lieutenant Collier has escaped. Seize him, men!
Don't waste your breath, Captain. Your men can't hear you.
What?
Those still alive are my men.
You're lying.
No, Captain. Every ship that has ever left Earth was controlled by a Voltan crew.
That's impossible. Those were hand-picked men.
Hand-picked by us.
I don't believe you.
Then why not call for help?
Carpenter, Robinson, Haley, report. Carpenter! Robinson! Haley! Report.
You see, Captain, it is quite useless. The Star Cloud will be taken to Volta for, shall we say, further experimentation.
I see. Of course, there's one thing you haven't counted on.
And just what is that, Captain?
This...
Are you in there, Lieutenant Carpenter?
Can't all be dead. There must be one alive. Smitty! Dr. Smithson! Smitty! Oh, Smitty. What have they done to you?
Lewis.
Those dirty... Don't talk.
I must lean closer. Not much time. Lewis, space blues.
Space blues? What is it, Smitty? What are you trying to tell me?
All men with space blues. Voltan.
Here, let me help you.
No, Lewis. Get message back to Earth. Voltan, fifth column. Watch out for space blues. Smitty.
Captain Thorson, you can't hide from us now. Come back to the bridge and surrender, or my men will come and get you.
Oh, yeah?
Captain Thorson, you can't come.
Hello, Starcloud calling Earth. Please, God, let me through before it's too late. Hello, Starcloud to Earth. Come in, please.
Hello?
Oh, hello. Can you hear me, Charlie?
Skipper, is that you?
You're getting my signal.
It's coming in a little louder now, Skip. Keep sending.
Thank God, Charlie. Now listen to me. Not much time. Get word to Colonel Harrison. Crew, mutinied. Most of crew members, Voltan.
What?
Voltan.
Spell that.
V-O-L.
Voltan?
That's right. They're from the planet Voltan.
Skipper, are you all right?
Look, Charlie, this is serious. They'll be here any second. Now listen, they have a fifth column on Earth. They're planning to invade you.
I don't mean it.
Of course I mean it. Now tell Harrison. Only as humans, you can detect them by space blues. You got that? Only Voltan gets space blues.
Space blue. I get you.
You warn everybody.
Captain? Captain Thorson. Hello, Starcloud. Come in.
What's the trouble, Sergeant?
I was just trying to raise the Starcloud, Colonel.
Had any luck?
No, sir. No contact.
No contact?
No, sir.
Nearly an hour since they hit the galactic barrier. I don't understand why they haven't tried to get a message back.
No, sir. Neither do I.
All right. I'll take over for a while.
Yes. You do that. You go right ahead, sir.
Right. Charlie, you'd better go out and get yourself some coffee. You look a little blue around the gills.
You have just heard No Contact, an adventure in time, space, and the unknown. The world of...
Dimension X.
Dimension X, on Tuned to Yesterday from April 29th, 1950 on NBC. Ernest Canoy's story, No Contact, would be heard again on X-1, NBC's most successful science fiction effort. It's an hour of sci-fi on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier, and now one of several broadcasts of suspense that dealt with space travel before we put a man on the moon. This from November 1st, 1959 on CBS. Lyle Sudrow, Margaret Draper, and Mason Adams star in the George Bamber story, Reentry.
And now, another tale well calculated to keep you in suspense. What will man's first flight into space be like? Will he be able to re-enter the Earth's atmosphere? And how will he feel? Well, we don't know for sure, so this is only imagination as we bring you George Bamber's Flight of Fancy, Re-entry.
I don't
don't think I'll ever get used to getting up and fixing your breakfast at 4:30 in the morning.
Well, a lot of men get up and go to work at 4:30 in the morning.
Want some more eggs? Howard, would you like some more eggs?
Oh, no. This is fine.
Today's the day, isn't it?
What day?
Today's the day you take it up, isn't it?
Yes, I suppose so. If everything checks out all right, there's no reason why not.
It's silly, but I keep wanting to ask you if the ship's all right. If it can really go up that high and withstand the heat and shock of the plunge back to Earth. Oh, I know it is, or else you wouldn't take it up, but I just want to hear you say everything's going to be all right.
Aaron, mechanically, the X-15 has been engineered to perfection. It's passed every test. Metallurgical, wind tunnel, powerless flight. In theory, we've flown it a million times. On the ground, we've taken it as far as we can go, and now we have to take it up.
And see once and for all if it's possible for a man to ride a skyrocket. And if he can he steer it back to Earth without it falling apart from heat and shock?
Aaron.
Oh, Pappy, I'm sorry. I could bite my tongue. I promised myself a million times that when the day came, I wouldn't say a word. Here I am. Oh, please forgive me. I know as well as you do that everything will be all right. More coffee?
No, I better be going. You want the station wagon today?
Yes, I've got to get groceries.
All right.
Let me walk you to the door.
Mm-hmm.
You got everything? Briefcase, notes?
Mm-hmm.
I suppose on this day of days I should be able to think of something witty and brave to say, but all I can think of is, be careful.
Well, don't worry, I will. Bye now.
Bye. Poppy?
Yeah?
You want to look in on the kids before you go?
What for? I'll see them when I get home tonight.
Oh, yes, of course. Bye, dear.
Well, that's it, Pappy. Everything has been checked and double-checked.
Mm-hmm.
The X-15's locked in and ready to go. At 0730 hours, Ed here will take off and carry you and your craft to 36,500 feet. Ground control will wait 2 seconds and then ignite your rockets. From then on, you're on your own.
There's no change in aircraft test?
No. Just don't take it more than 100 miles up. All we're interested in this trip is re-entry. And I don't think we'll have any problems there.
Uh-huh.
Any questions?
No, sir.
Very well, then. I've got to get over to operations or I'll miss the whole show. Good luck to you both.
Thank you.
Oh,
thank you, sir. Well, let's take the Jeep over, right?
Well, how does it feel to be a white-collar hero?
What do you mean by that?
Is there any doubt in your mind, Pappy, that you'll make it?
There's always doubt, Ed. That's why I fly, to eliminate doubt.
Tell me something, Pappy. Are you scared?
What do you think?
Well, if you're like me, I know. I wonder what it will feel like to fly into the edge of space, to be out there all alone, the first man up.
Ed, I know that at first I'll be heavy from the thrust of the rocket, 7 times my own weight. And then I know I'll be weightless when they cut out. And then during re-entry, as the atmosphere starts to drag against the hull of the ship, I'll slowly gain weight again. More than that, I don't know what I'll feel. I'll find out when I get there.
Pappy, when we're 7 miles up, I might be so busy getting ready to drop your plane, I might forget to wish you luck. Let me do it now.
Thanks, Ed. I might need it. Well, you drive or shall I?
I'll drive.
This is ground control. You are now 0-1 minute from drop-off.
Roger, ground control.
X-15, this is aircraft commander. X-15, this is aircraft commander. Your loxy and ammonia have been topped off and disconnected. You are free to fall.
Thanks, Ed.
Our altitude is 36,500 feet, and our airspeed is 5-0 constant. The flight plan is now yours.
Okay, Ed. Everything checks out across the board.
Just for kicks, do you have your rocket throttle set on prime?
I've been through this maneuver so many times I can do it in my sleep. Everything here is straight stick.
Good. Well, you are now 7 miles above the face of the Earth. Would you like to try for 100?
I have a lady in the balcony, Doctor.
This is ground control. Please clear the air. You are now 0-30 seconds from drop-off. Please clear the air.
Will you listen to them up there talking just like it was any other day?
What do you want them to do, get out on the wing and pray?
Well, I do stump. You know, they've never fired those engines in the air before. I'll bet they blow right up in his face if they fire at all.
Oh, knock it off, Sarge. When they were making the free fall test, you swore that ship would fall like a stone. Well, it didn't. He flew it down better than a glider.
The free fall was different. This time, I'm right. She doesn't blow to smithereens when he cuts in them rockets. And she'll heat up and fall apart on re-entry. One way or the other, he's not coming back.
You wouldn't like to make a little wager on that, would you?
And bet you a month's pay.
You're on.
Make it 2 months of your pay. You E3s don't make enough for a man to live on.
Okay, my two against your one says he makes it back.
And I say he don't.
All right, men, knock it off. Tend to your equipment.
Yes, sir. Yes.
Minus 13 seconds from drop-off. Ready for countdown.
Roger, ground control. Stable table. On. Primer. On. All controls operational. I'm ready to roll.
Countdown. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2. Drop off.
May, why doesn't he say something? His orders were to talk as much as he can.
Minus 30 seconds to burn out.
Give him time. As soon as the rocket motor's cut out, he'll be able to talk. Right now, he's plastered back against his seat with 7 Gs. He feels that if he opens his mouth right now, his jaw will tear off.
Aircraft commander to ground control. He's out of sight now. Both engines fired perfectly, and he climbed upstairs faster than anything I've seen in a lifetime of flying.
Tell Ed a good job. Well done.
Sir, radar reports X-15 on course and climbing steadily.
How about telemetrics?
Respiration twice normal. Heartbeat up from normal, 65 points. Body temperature normal.
90 seconds. 90 seconds is all it takes him to burn 7 tons of fuel and climb 25 miles. Well, that sounds fast enough, but down here it seems like forever.
Take it easy, General. He'll make it.
Yes, I know.
Climb out.
But why doesn't he say something? As soon as the rocket's cut out, he's weightless and coasting. He should be able to talk. Ground control, make sure we have radio contact.
X-15, this is ground control. X-15, this is ground control. Do you read me? Over. X-15, this is ground control. Do you read me? Over.
Ground control, this is your old pappy, and I read you just fine. Just fine.
What's the matter with him? He doesn't sound right.
He's completely weightless now. I think he's experiencing a side effect of exuberance and exhilaration. It's to be expected.
Hello, Pappy. This is General Brighton. Can you read me?
Yes, General. Us chickens hear you loud and clear.
Try to keep us informed as much as possible on your observations and operations. How does the ship handle?
Like a dream, baby. Like an effortless dream. Everything is pinpoint control. It seems like I'm just sitting still, but the stable table says we're still climbing at 45 degrees. And if I'm to believe the airspeed indicator hanging on the wall, I'm traveling at 3,900 miles an hour.
Pappy, describe the effects of weightlessness. Do you feel nauseated, dizzy?
No, I feel fine. I feel like I'm home for the first time in my life. And like this is where I belong and I want to stay. It's so easy to move if I...
Want to lift my arm, it jumps up. If I stick it straight out in the air and relax, it stays where I leave it so I can rest it anywhere I want it. But that isn't the best, Dr. May. Not the best. Oh, you should be up here, Doctor. It's beautiful. It's just beautiful.
What's beautiful?
Space. The threshold of the universe. It's the beginning, Dr. May, and it's the end.
Describe it, Pappy.
Well, it's black. The universe is black. But for a long while, it was misty blue-gray, but now it's just black velvet. And the stars are brilliant. They crawl through the universe like huge Christmas tree bulbs. Steady, blue, green, yellow. And they don't twinkle. They just hang there. And if I keep going, I can reach one. Just a little bit farther.
X-15, this is ground control. You have now reached an altitude of 95 miles. Begin re-entry maneuver.
Well, if it's all the same to you, ground control, I've got enough gas. I just think I'll just go a little bit farther.
X-15, you have passed the apex of your flight. Your orders are to level off for re-entry.
But I have to keep going. I'll be back.
What's the matter with him?
Evidently, the aura of well-being that weightlessness produces has given him a dangerous false sense of security.
Please, just let me climb another 10 minutes.
Another 10 minutes? By that time, he won't be able to re-enter. He'll shoot out into space.
Try giving him a direct order. In this childlike state, he might respond to the first positive suggestion.
X-15, this is General Brighton. I order you to level off that aircraft and commence the classic re-entry maneuver. Do you read me?
Sir?
That ship is property of the United States government. I order you to level off and return it to this field in accordance with your contract.
But, sir...
Don't argue with me. Bring it down.
Yes, sir.
What's he doing, Radar?
He's leveling off, sir. Now he's beginning the 45-degree angle of re-entry. Telemetrics, what do you read?
Temperature normal. Pulse normal. Respiration normal.
Radar reports the aircraft has definitely begun the correct angle of re-entry. Pappy, Dr. May again. If it doesn't interfere too much, we would appreciate it if you'd keep giving your sensations and reactions whenever you can during re-entry.
What for? I don't see any point in it.
Please, Pappy. It may be important.
All right. When I pushed the nose down, the edge of the earth broke above my instrument panel like the rim of a great sea. A sea that has turned to blue-green mud, covered with a cataract film of clouds. The rivers of lead are beginning to pour through my veins, wading down my arms. It's getting harder to breathe. And the sound is beginning to come back. And I feel like I'm turning my back on a new world and re-entering a dead one. Sound is beginning to come back. Sounds like the plane is falling apart, and there are people standing on my wings outside. She's getting difficult to handle. The ship is pitching and yawing as she hits each shock wave of atmosphere. And I can feel it start to heat up. In spite of the air conditioning and insulation, the heat is almost unbearable in here. No!
What's happened?
No! No! I can't! I can't!
Pappy, do you read me? What's going on out there?
I can't! I can't come back to that crumbling world of gravity and death. I can't.
He's going in the thermal thicket. What's going on out there?
This is where you'll melt apart in midair.
I don't belong down there. Nobody does. I'm going back while there's still time.
Okay, Cox, I'll raise you another month's pay.
Money in the bank.
Pappy, what's wrong?
I've got to get back before it's too late.
My arms are getting so heavy. My fingers hardly move. The ship's so hard to fly. I've got to get out of this safety harness.
The ship must be too hot to fly. He's trying to bail out.
I think he's losing his mind. Pappy, listen to me. What do you think you're doing?
Man was never meant to live on Earth, Dr. May. We were meant to live free. Free from the oppressive weight of flesh. Man was made to live in space, and I'm getting out of this safety harness and going back out there.
Mad, he's mad. Pappy, I order you to fasten your safety harness and bring that ship in.
You can't order me, General. It's getting hotter in here. I can see the skin on the nose change from black to dull cherry red. It looks like a hot piece of steel. Hot and dirty like the coal of a cigarette on the cement. I have to disconnect this umbilical cord.
Pappy, do not disconnect the umbilical cord. You cannot live without it. Right now you think you can, but you cannot. You need the oxygen to breathe.
Pappy, that ship is property of the United States government.
The ship is yours. My mind is my own, General. I have to go back while there's still time. While there's still time to disconnect this.
Pappy, listen to me. You cannot live without the cord. You need oxygen to live. Pappy, for the sake of Aaron and the children, leave the cord alone. Pappy, do you hear me?
What's the telemetric readers?
They've dropped to normal, sir. Right across the board.
Normal?
Normal, sir.
Radar, what's your reading?
Aircraft adhering to the proper 45-degree angle of descent. Losing altitude at the proper speed.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is your news reporter, Dave Miller. At the moment, I'm standing at the edge of Rogers Dry Lake in the Mojave Desert at Edwards Air Force Base in Southern California. In just a few seconds, if all goes well, a sleek, black, ferrous alloy rocket-propelled aircraft will come hurtling out of the sky from the east, slide across this flat desert at speeds up to 200 miles an hour, and stop just a few yards away from where I'm standing. And then Mr. Howard Pappy Winfield will step from the cockpit and become the first man to have flown into outer space and returned. It is a beautiful day at Edwards Air Force Base. The sun is hot and bright, but there is a prevailing westerly wind. Oh, right now, out of the ground control complex, I see officers and men coming out, climbing into vehicles. It won't be long now. There's General Brighton. Perhaps I can get him to say a few words on today's test. General Brighton? Yes, General Brighton, would you care to comment on the success of this afternoon's test?
It won't be counted a success until the plane is safely at a stop on that runway.
Well, is there any reason to believe it won't be a success?
No comment.
Several men are pointing off to the east, but as yet... Yes. Yes, now I see it too. It looks to be hardly bigger than a speck, just a few feet above the horizon. But it's growing bigger all the time. Now we can see it quite clearly. The pilot has jettisoned his ventral stabilizer. This strange, dart-like aircraft has no wheels. It lands on steel skids on its underside. There she's touching down. You can see a cloud of smoke from the floor where she hit. She bounced up. Now she's flying again. This is the ship the newspaper men call the missile with the man in it. And that's exactly what she looks like, a huge black missile with stubby wings. A plume of dust is following her. It decreases as the ship slows down, and it is slowing. In a moment, it will be almost abreast of it. There it is. It is almost stopped. Listen to the cheering of the technicians as they run toward the ship. I'm trying to keep up with them. It sounds like Cape Canaveral on a good day.
Hey, you want me up?
Getting closer to the ship, the dust is settling over her dull black surface. Her sharp needle nose looks deadly. Now they're moving an aluminum ladder into place next to the ship. Mechanics in asbestos gloves are working to get the canopy raised. The latch is released,
Slowly, the canopy is being raised. In just a moment, we catch our first sight of the first man from outer space. If I can just get closer. Ladies and gentlemen. Ladies and gentlemen. There is no one there. The cockpit is empty.
Suspense. You've been listening to Re-Entry, written for Suspense by George Bamber. In a moment, the names of our players and a word about next week's story of Suspense. In this day and atomic age, another place to find suspense is in the news. And one reporter who never loses an opportunity to make the most of a colorful, suspenseful news story is Lowell Thomas. Heard weekday evenings on CBS Radio. Heard in tonight's story were Lyle Sudrow as Pappy, with Margaret Draper, Les Damon, Bob Reddick, Frank Thomas Jr., Robert Donnelly, Mason Adams, Jim Bowles, Frank Butler, and Whitfield Connor. Listen again next week when we return with The Last Trip, written especially for Suspense by Ralph Bell and Eugene Francis, the story of a man's last ride. Another tale well calculated to keep you in suspense on CBS Radio.
Suspense on Tuned 2 Yesterday from November 1st, 1959 on CBS. And that wraps up this hour of science fiction on Tuned 2 Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVanier. Thanks for tuning in.